The shot hit the wall. Looked like it was headed toward goal. Comes back out. Shot fires. Goal! The Frisco Kid has scored. 2-1 U.S.
What's good? Welcome to another episode of Diaspora United. I am Andre Carlisle, and I am here as always, thankfully, with Courtney Stitt. Sorry we've been gone for a minute. Life got in the way, but we good. Courtney is back. Courtney, how are you?
My tummy hurts.
Welcome back.
All of a sudden, we were about to start recording, and I just got a massive wave of nausea. And unfortunately, I can't think about literally anything else besides the fact that my tummy hurts. I like that. Have you seen that meme of those two dogs? It's like the strong dog and like the weak dog.
Yes, definitely.
And it's like the strong dog's like, I'm strong from the outside, and then the weak dog's like, but inside my tummy hurts. It's like my daily life.
Well, I hope, but you know, better.
I don't know. I'm just hoping it goes away.
No, me too.
By the end of this episode, I hope it disappears.
Hopefully. If you need a break, just let me know. You know, I'll just ramble on and, you know, you run away and, you know, do what you got to do. It's just saying.
Go away, die temporarily and come back being like, I'm fine. I'm fine.
Yeah, you got to do what you got to do. I'll cut it all out. It's fine. But glad to have you back. We know we missed last week, but we're excited to talk. Got plenty to talk about. So we're going to kind of like go all over the place. But before we do that, we always, always, always read a review. I said always, sometimes.
And we need more reviews to read, so leave them.
That's also fair. That's
Add in a name for Andre, the star on top of our Christmas tree, Carlisle.
Yeah, so don't do that. You can do dad jokes. That's actually what we prefer.
You can leave Andre a middle name.
Yeah, it's another good one. You don't have to do that either. You should just do dad jokes, as I've been. just do that. But yeah, we appreciate it. Like, y'all, if you listen to other podcasts, you know people beg, people plead, people have all kinds of ways of asking you to subscribe, but also rate, but also review, but also give the stars, all of them. All of that business, we ask the exact same thing, but we ain't gonna bore you. However, if you do leave a review, which hopefully you're doing right now, please leave a dad joke because it's funny. This one doesn't have a dad joke, but it's a very sincere review, so we're gonna read it. It's from KRB50, entitled, Never Skip an Episode. We appreciate that. I like that energy. It reads, there are some football podcasts where I might skip an episode, but never this one. I love that kind of dedication and appreciate you. Shout out KRB50.
Honestly, I'm deeply surprised because I could never listen to myself this much. I'm happy you do, but like, I could never listen to me this much.
Yo, I'm going to be honest. So y'all sending us the Spotify rap, like that really like touched me. That, because I was like, first of all, like I had two emotions. One, I was like, oh, damn, like this is amazing. Like y'all love us. Y'all listen to us. We appreciate it. You know, we're really, really happy when we started this thing. We had no idea what to expect. It's amazing. If y'all know the story of Courtney and I, this podcast started from a DM. So like all this stuff is just like, it's super dope. And then I was like, damn, y'all really be having me in your ears that long?
Truly, I was like, yes, I was the exact same. I was so touched. I was like, wow, I cannot believe this. Like, especially because I think for the majority of people, honestly, like, they tend to listen to podcasts on Apple Podcasts. So yeah, the fact that we had so much growth on Spotify is like really baffling to me. Even though I will say Spotify, after bullying them once, put us in a rap about best women's soccer podcast to listen to. That did in fact happen.
That is true.
I did bully them a little bit. Mostly, I was really mad that just Alexi Lawless was there out of everyone. I was like, are you kidding me right now?
Right? Come on.
So the fact that, yeah, we got all those numbers from Spotify, and I was just absolutely baffled because I was like, y'all really do we listen to us this much, huh? It's baffling to me. You that like have just listened to episodes full through and through. That's absolutely baffling. But always eternally grateful.
Eternally. Yeah, it's super dope. And this is exactly the kind of thing that we wanted to do. So appreciate it. And this episode, rundown real quick. What are we going to talk about? We're going to talk about the U.S. Women's National Team because they're inching closer to being Sister Emma adjacent. They're Sister Emma adjacent right now. So we had a couple interesting lineups, a couple interesting games against China we're going to talk about. Talking about the Nations League that went down over there in Europe, that was kind of dope. New format, kind of new competition, but led to some absolutely outrageous moments and some drama and some teams being unserious. And then we're going to talk a little bit about the NWSL schedule framework, which dropped. there are some key notes to kind of know about it, kind of update it, kind of maybe talk about what we think. And you know what, Courtney, I also want to like add something. I also kind of want to talk about free agency a little bit, because last year it really popped off and now it seems like everybody shook. So I kind of want to just talk about like your thoughts on that. So maybe we'll add that to the NWSL framework conversation at the end. Anything else to add before we get started, though?
There also is an expansion draft upon us.
Yes.
Barreling down.
Real soon.
That's absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
Costa Rica scored 19 goals in their last match.
Good lord.
There was also, like, the international break, there's like so much going on. It's always, you almost at this point have to keep like your head on a swivel, because either there's like some crazy going on in UEFA, some crazy going on in CONCACAF, like there's a lot going on.
Yeah, it was difficult to keep up with it all, but you know what? I tried, and you know, we can't talk about it all, but we're going to pick and choose and we'll see where we get out. So, all right. I think we're ready. We ready?
I think so. I heard a certain garden tool was mad.
I heard so as well. I heard those garden tools are extremely upset. They're having a very difficult time right now. Pray for them, honestly. But yeah, so this feeds into the conversation. Connor, you killing me. You absolutely killing
me. You're our absolute fave.
So, okay. Two games. I'm just going to kind of like, we're going to talk about them individually, but real quick off the top, in case you missed it, December 2nd, the U.S. Women's National Team played China, won 3-0. That game was kind of dope. It was the first kind of like real change in tactics, I think. Certainly change in personnel that we saw. You know, some personnel remained the same, but some change in personnel, some different things that we saw from the team. China adjusted just a few days later, December 5th. It was a 2-1 win with China scoring the first goal. So that was interesting as well. And that was also China going into a bit of a different tactic as well, is what they went into that kind of took a little bit to solve. There were some second half substitutions that need to be made to kind of pull that one out. But anyway, Courtney, let's start with the first game. 3-0 China. The goals by Sophia Smith, Lindsay Horan, which that was a real weird goal, and then Trinity Robin scored. What did you think about, like, just the overall, like, the lineup, the approach, everything? Because this is kind of like our first glimpse, maybe, at an Emma-inspired, maybe an Emma, what is it, a zest of Emma on the team. Like, we don't have her
zest
fully.
Zest of Emma.
Just a zesting of Emma on the team. So, what was your first impression?
Yeah, surprisingly, I think for the first time, maybe the first time in a long time, that the U.S. has been quite wasteful in front of goal. We know that Sophia Smith got that first goal, but, and I mean, she said it on the broadcast, like, this is not news to her, that she should have had many more goals by the time that half ended. You know, but I liked some of the things that were going on. I know officially it was like a, despite what the broadcast says, it was a 4-2-2, but really at times it was like, to me, I know it's not officially the same, but like, to me, like a 4-2-2-2 and a 4-4-2 box are like very similar. It's a difference like what a grapefruit and a pomelo. Like they're very they're like literally very similar.
I was not prepared for that. For that comparison.
Or like an orange and a tangerine. I was like trying to think of like two similar fruits, and for some reason, pomelo popped in my mind. It's like a Gala apple and a Honeycrisp.
Damn, rolling. Okay, keep going.
But I was saying, like, they're very similar, but really it was like a 4-4-2 box. And we saw some really interesting things going on. We saw Casey Kruger beat in that foot at times. It was like, really at times, and this is why I'm gonna start seeding that, putting the idea in people's brains. And I know that the OG soccer heads are probably gonna come yell at me, and I'm like, I fundamentally don't care. I think we need to change the way we talk about formations. Because on paper, it's a 4-4-2 box. But if you actually watch it in practice, and maybe it's not, we should change the way we talk about formation, but we should include like the defensive formation and the offensive formation. Because the offensive formation was really a 3-2-1-4, or like a 3-2-5. A 3-2-5. And you know, we saw Casey Kruger getting high and wide when Mitch Purse came in, even though we're like, don't make Mitch Purse a right back, please. I have we saw like purse getting.
I have a but comma, however, on to add on I was, that. But I want you
I know.
To put.
I mean, I probably agree, and I'm probably going to say it of like, if you're gonna, I mean, Mitch Purse is a great wing back, but you have to like keep her as a wing back. Don't do like the wing back right back. I'm like, if she's gonna be a wing back, have her be a wing back, because I actually do think she is really great at being a wing back. But you know, we saw some things that were happening, and honestly, I really liked it for the most part. Say just opening vibe wise. Seemed like the players knew what they were supposed to be doing. There didn't seem to be a lot of confusion. There very much seemed to be a very concrete game plan that they were trying to execute, which, coming out of Vlaco's era, is a huge refresher. I was like, oh, these players know what they're doing and have a very clear and distinct plan of how they plan to do that. So yeah, honestly, I thought from the first game it was good. Like, obviously the finishing was an issue. I don't think it'll necessarily be a long-term issue. I think we have to think about also the majority of these players outside of what Lindsey Horan and Mia Fishel haven't, and like technically what Mitch Purse and Lynn Williams and Jenna Neiswanger and maybe Alana Cook and Emily Sonnet, like five of the 27 have played soccer in like literally the last month, like on a professional, like in a professional game. So I know, I thought it's like a good first step. I do have some questions, and maybe this will lead us into the second game if you want me to, mostly about Emily Fox in the system. I know it's like very early days, but like, concussion aside, even in the first 5 minutes before she got that hit to the face, and thinking about even the first game where she was technically one of those like center backs that kind of stayed home, I'm curious of how, when Emma does get in, how she's going to use a player like Emily Fox, because I think for a lot of us, what makes Emily Fox a great player, what makes her fun to watch, is that she kind of roams and floats, and we like to say she likes to take the scenic route sometimes. And so she pops up in places where she's supposed to be, and it's actually funny because it's like, when Mitch Purse came in that first game, I actually thought she was popping up in places I sometimes would expect Emily Fox to be, but I have not yet seen, for example, Emily Fox pop up in those Emily Fox-esque spaces in these games yet. So it's just like something I'm kind of, you know, thinking about. But I thought, you know, it's a good step in the right direction. Still saw issues happening. That goal conceded. The U.S. hasn't been good on set pieces since.
Yeah, it's been a problem.
Julie? Maybe Sam. Sam, Julie. Them leaving. They haven't really been good at defensive set pieces, or even at times offensive set pieces. But so yeah, there's obviously still work to be done. But I thought, like, in terms of general vibe, it's a good step in the right direction.
Yeah, I thought much the same. I like that first game really made me happy. Like, honestly, I kind of don't even look at the final score. I know 3-0 still looks like a really solid win, but you could have doubled that. It should have been 6-0. I mean, we know. Soph said it. You said it. She should have had a hat trick by halftime. You know, there was, I mean, we're not even talking like, you know, she had 1v1 opportunities. Like, there was an open goal. She just straight up missed one. So, like, and I do think that that's a byproduct of just missing so much time trying to come back from an injury, work her way back into form. And in form, Sophia Smith absolutely does not miss those chances and probably creates one or two more for herself. So, like, we know how that goes, and it's quite, for me, it's all right. It's fine that happened. They still got the goals that they needed to get to literally dominate that game. And I think you, like, for me, you hit on like a big one. They look like they knew what they were supposed to be doing. We saw so many times under Vlaco where the team just didn't look like they had any idea what they were supposed to do, what to do if they were getting pressed, what to do if the ball got here, what their options were, things were slow, all of that. That's why I really like that 4-2-3-1 that the players put themselves in against Sweden at the World Cup. I was so annoyed when that continued, because I'm like, that is not the style these players should get in the habit of playing. You should only need to bust that out versus like one or two teams throughout like a year, because this team is too good to play like that all the time. And we saw that. Like, we saw the reason why. We saw a press. We saw a counter press. We saw like them absolutely like all over China. And I think one of the biggest things you can look at, and not that these stats mean a ton, but 612 passes, 65% possession, 85% pass accuracy, 20 shots,
Andre, these stats.
11 on target, right? I just like that's what I want to see. Like, that's the kind of stuff that this team is capable of versus pretty much anybody. Like, there are some teams you're not going to be able to dominate possession like that against, like Spain. They're not going to give you the ball that much, right? But whenever they step on the pitch, most times they step on the pitch, this is what you want to see. And I just have to give a serious shout out to the very first goal, because I think that's what set the tone. The pass from the back, from Naomi Girma to Trinity Rodman, cut it across to Sophia Smith. It's just like, you give me any defense, they can't stop that. And that's like, that was a move, that was a connection that, like, it warmed my heart to see. It was perfect. It was beautiful.
You want to know one of the funniest things? I was actually laughing at that because I was like, how long have we talked about the midfield and the midfield functioning for Naomi, and the midfield not connecting to an attack for Naomi Garber to just ping a ball.
Right.
I was like, okay. She said, hush. And I was like, okay. Right.
But that's the thing. Like, if the midfield won't midfield, then okay, we have center backs who can do things like that. So then let them do that. Like, there are plenty of ways to solve problems in this team. They just weren't, like, Vlatko just never set them up to do so.
Yeah. Well, and I think part of it too is that, like, the goal, even, I will say, the goal Sophia Smith scored, you might think it's technically, like, on paper, it's a simple few presses, right? So Naomi Girma ball over the top to on-running Trinity Rodman, who puts a ball on a platter to Sophia Smith in the box. But with that, I think the part of that goal that matters most to me is that Smith was stretching for it.
Yep.
Like, she didn't immediately get there, and she just, like, put a foot out and was like, anything I'm going to touch on this, and it's going to go in the net. And I feel like at times during Vlatko's era, and to be fair, like, everything that we've heard from players and even Twyla Kilgore has said that this has been like a breath of fresh air. Like, the environment has changed. Like, there's some excitement in the room. And I feel like that really shows in that moment of, like, I think about the times where the U.S. has, like, really needed to score, right? And it's like, not saying that at those moments they weren't stretching for the ball, but it just kind of demonstrated to me, like, I feel like there have been times previously where the U.S. really needed to score, and, like, maybe at times people weren't stretching for the ball, like, or just trying to get a foot on it, or just, like, you know, doing the equivalent of, like, hoofing the ball up and just kind of seeing what happens. And so, I don't know, I feel like that obviously is an important, like, symbolic goal, but I think, to me, it just shows it's, like, the beginnings of, like, maybe some of that edge coming back of, like, why people hate the U.S., like me, official, so hilariously said in the article that dropped today. But, yeah, I mean, I do think it is a step in the right direction. Obviously, there are going to be a few things to fix if we're talking about conceding, because it was actually funny. I was in a work group chat, because people sometimes just, like, hit me up being like, what are you seeing in this game? Talking about the second game, the 2-1. Also, shout out to Jaden Shaw, hometown hero. But also, what a great goal. See, and that's the thing. And this actually kind of reminds me a little bit of, like, Chelsea at times. Of, you know, sometimes Chelsea decide, like, wants to, like, walk the ball in the net. And you're like, just put your foot through it and shoot, and you'll score a goal. And to me, that was a perfect encapsulation of it, because actually, at the end of the first half of the 2-1 game, the second game, I was like, I would love to see, I'll just love to see a touch map of how many times the U.S. has touched the ball in the, like, in China's box, and yet not, and, like, it not be a strike, or a, like, or, you know, a shot on goal or something like that. And to me, that goal was a perfect encapsulation. I was like, and I tweeted, I was like, that's why sometimes you just, like, put your foot through the ball. And you're like, I'm just gonna have, like, a clean strike at it and, like, see what happens. And also, that strike was so clean. It was such a nice, clean strike.
You know, what's so funny to me about that goal is, if you watch the replay, Jaden Shaw completely just bogarts Emily Sonnet. Like, Sonnet almost, like, puts both of her hands up, like, my bad. Like, she's, like, about to do something to the ball, and Shaw comes flying in and just pummels the ball. Shaw had the confidence to be like, no, get out the way, I got this. I love that.
Right. It's one of those things where, like, you know, it's like, you need a winner, or you need an equalizer, and, like, you have people around the box, and you're just like, hit it! And just, like, start shouting, like, hit it at the players. Or, like, people shouting, shoot, and it's like, then sometimes a moment like that happens, and I'm like, oh, it's so clean. And it's also sometimes it's like, you're not gonna walk the ball in the net, just put your foot through it and have a strike. Yeah, that was, I feel like those were the big things for me. To bring up why I brought up the working chat, talking about that China goal is one thing I was saying. I was like, the U.S. is, like, everyone's playing so high. Like, it was like Opera Kingsbury was just in no man's land, and, like, because she needed to be near the goal. Because literally there are times where I was like, Naomi Girma is 10 yards into China's half. Like, I was like, everyone, and the thing is, like, Tierna Davidson also wasn't far off, where I was like, everyone is so high up, and I was like, a well-scouted team, and I'm not saying that the U.S. is always going to play like this, but let's say the U.S. has always played like this, right? Like, really, really high line. Also, a side note, I thought they did really, really well pressing and winning the ball back on getting high turnovers up the pitch. I thought they were really, really good at that. Now, obviously, you need to start converting those chances, but, like, the actual press was really good, like, extremely effective. But it's funny because I was talking about, I was like, they are so far up the pitch. I was like, if China plays a quick 1-2, they can just bypass all of the U.S. and basically be one-on-one in goal. And it's funny because that's basically was kind of the lead up to the goal they ended up scoring. Obviously, you know, Emily Fox makes the foul. We can argue she shouldn't have been in the game at that point. But I also understand, I think it happened to maybe a friend of the pod, Imani Dorsey, where like she got a concussion in the middle of a Gotham game, but she came out at halftime. And I remember asking Scott about it. I believe it was Scott, but I can't remember off the top of my head, but it was like during 2021. And he basically said that like sometimes concussion symptoms like come up later. Like you pass the protocols and you think you're fine and then they like hit later, which to me in my brain, I'm like, I feel like that means that protocol should probably take longer. And like in general, but obviously, you know that happens. But yeah, that goal, while offside or not, like it's something that like they are 100% need to pay attention to and like sharpen up. And also, yeah, the marking on that goal was atrocious. It was not good. Offside or not, like the half zone, half zone, half man marking was just, it was not good on that one play. And I feel like that was also probably the one play that they were ever tested. But like, yeah, that's not ideal. And to be fair, that's like also something that has been an issue for the U.S. for a long time of set pieces.
Yeah, I mean, that's what makes it so annoying when stuff like that happens. Is just like it's the kind of goal that a team can score that can put you behind when you're like clearly better than they are. And, you know, you have the talent to be able to dominate the game or the rest of the game, but you still have to fight back. And then not only do you have to fight back, you score a goal and now you're only level. So you still just have to find that winner. So it really puts you behind. And so, yeah, though they have to really find ways to like avoid those scenarios. But honestly, I thought that it wasn't the worst thing. You know, I starkly tweeted mm-hmm. Hayes out after the goal because I just thought it was funny.
Think people weren't paying attention when I was like, why are you like this? That we were joking.
Yeah, I was seriously waiting to wake up to like every time I tweet something somewhat spicy, especially around like anybody that's like based in Europe, teams based in Europe, I wake up to a bunch of like quote tweets, some private, some public, that just are like completely missing the point. And I'm like, why can't y'all just have fun? I'm gonna have more to talk about that later. But yeah, I was just being silly on the internet. But yeah, I do think that was important. It was an important kind of, you needed to respond to that. I thought where as much as the squad looked like they knew exactly what they wanted to do and how they wanted to play, I think they looked a little bit disconnected in the first half of that game. I don't know if it was it kind of, maybe it was personnel that was more of an experimental lineup. You know, you got debuts in the first game from Nyswanger and Olivia Moultrie, and then Nyswanger started in that game against China. The 2-1, the second game, Tierna Davidson came in. You also had, like you mentioned, Emily Fox, who, wait, well, yeah. And I don't know.
There were seven changes.
Well, she was in there. Yeah, there were a few changes.
Even though I actually said, I thought Hatch played well. I thought at times Lindsey Horan got in her way, where I was like, why are you there?
This is a constant thing. It's
back up 10 yards.
Horan and Sonic kept being in the way. And I'm like, we have let the forwards be the forwards. It's kind of the thing. Like if you sit back, because to me, there's an art to like that box crash and that late arrival. Like that's fine. But if you just camp out, stop that. Players need to use that space who hang out there. So like that, sometimes that gets on my nerves. Like unless the ball's out wide and about to be swung in, okay, get in there to get your header or whatever. But in build-up play, stop. Get back. That's not
me. Yeah, there were a few times where I was like, I mean, and to be fair, I noticed it a bit more of Horan than Sonic, because for the majority of this game, I would say Horan was also in a more advanced position. But, like, I think there was a time where maybe it was, like, Ashley Hatch picked up the ball or something and swung it. Or, like, someone picked up the ball and, like, swung it in. Maybe it was Jaden Shaw and, like, Horan and Lynn Williams were going for the same ball. And I looked in that moment and I said, Now, why are you right there? There's only three attackers in this play. And I feel like they should all be the forward line of the U.S. So, yeah, I think that happened. And I will say, like, I think her maybe that's all why maybe in the first game also we were seeing a bit more fluidity in the attack. Was that she was playing in a more, not defensive, but she was just, like, farther back in the field. Like, she wasn't necessarily playing as a six, but, like, she was farther back in the field. And so I think in the second match, we just saw her in that more advanced position, and it was like a, hey, now, why are you, like, why are you over there? I thought Sam Coffey, great, got her first international goal.
Yeah, that was
a for a moment, too. I thought that was a no-look. It's because the way she was, like, bending her head down that I was like, is she trying to no-look this keeper? I was like, if she no-looked does this, I'm going to absolutely lose it. But yeah, I thought Sam Coffey coming in was really good. We also saw the debut of Corbin Albert. Fortunately, Girly Pop got a cleat to the face, which was deeply unfortunate.
Sure did. Got kicked right in the face.
Right in the face. Rough. Like, you know when you're like, oh, they kind of got kicked in the face, and you'll, like, see, like, the point of someone's, like, boot, like, tap their forehead or something?
Yeah.
Like, obviously it's a kick in the face, but no, she got, like, a big kick to the face. And I was like, oh, my God. She just got kicked in the face so bad. But yeah, to me, it's like a step in the right direction, right? Like, how many veterans, I think Lindsey Rand was the most experienced player of this group.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah. I mean,
I know Rose, she has more cats.
Rose didn't like, no. But Rose didn't really play much. She played in that first game and then that was it.
Well, no, I was thinking, I was like, I think Emily Sana has been around the national team for longer, but Lindsey Horan has more like actual national team cats.
Yeah.
That's what I had paused to think about. I was like, wait a second. Sam Coffey said she was channeling Becky in that game. And I was like, so you took Becky Sauerbrunn's international goal, huh, Sam Coffey?
I had the same thought when she said that. She was talking about how much she had asked and she was so grateful to wear that number. And then she scored. I was like, okay, so you're going to have to get that goal up. Goal. I'm sorry.
We need a Becky goal. took Becky's goal. No, but I thought besides that, the kids are good. Trini Robin, really good as usual.
Question for you.
Yeah, I think she is special. I think there's only a few players in the world that score their first ever professional goal with their first two touches of the ball. Also, one of them is a ball over the top and controlling it and striking it. If that doesn't immediately scream special to you, I'm going to need you to go to the optometrist and go get your eyes checked because she was special from the moment she started. And she's still special. I'm actually a bit concerned about the number of minutes she's playing because I know she's 21, but think about all the players that the U.S. won the 2019 World Cup with in that starting 11 who aren't currently playing footy right now or are just coming back from a long-term injury. Like, I know we're talking about Sam. I know we've talked about Drew Lertz, who's now retired. But also, I mean, Abby Dahlkemper just came back in the mix. And Abby had a broken back? Like, it's not like they're like, right, like, it's not like these are like small injuries. Like, these are like serious injuries that I can't lie. I think the U.S. not renewing Dawn or like letting Dawn Scott leave the program is a huge miss. I think they need to call her up right now. Be like, Dawn, I'm sorry. Sorry, Washington Spirit. We need this for the good of the nation.
I want to speak up in defense of the Spirit, but because I have no idea what the hell they're doing this offseason, and they're ignoring me every time I try to request information, I'm gonna go ahead and say, okay, fine. If Don wants to go down, then I get it. Everybody else leaving. Angela Salem bounced. I don't know. Okay.
But I'm also like, but the Spirit, the nation, U.S. soccer needs it because the way these injuries have gone about, like so many players are just injured or like going to very quickly start getting overuse injuries. Like I know Trinity is just 21. So like, I understand she's, a young player and just generally a young person, but also like that is also for the work that she's doing, no shade to like goalkeepers or center backs, but like the miles she's putting in every single game, 19 games for club, 18 games for country. Like that's a lot of minutes.
It is. And I do hope that she's able to rest this off season and doesn't like I think she posted something like a couple of weeks ago of her like training on the fence. Like maybe just chill. Maybe you don't need to worry about that right now. Like it'll be fine. But she's also just like relentlessly intense about like getting better, adding to her game, all of that, which is honestly what makes the Spirits like given her how much she said she had four coaches already under her, and she's going to have a new one getting into 2024. Like, she really needs stability to be able to, like, maximize it. She's doing a great job on her own, but I would love to get, like, a coach in here who actually, like, could work with her and they could, like, work together on certain things. But she's kind of having to do it on her own or, like, with the coaches as they come up and being like, okay, well, that coach is gone. All right, cool. Who's next? And I don't really love that. So, you know, I got my beast. This ain't about the spirit. That I wanted to talk about, like, just a couple highlights for me from individual players. For this, and then we can move on because I do want to talk about the Nations League, which was really fun. But for me, my standouts were like Casey Krueger,
who, yes,
again,
I was hoping you would bring her up.
Should have been a 100 plus cap player for the national team. I know there was injury, I know there was pregnancy, like, but she is so damn good. Like, that role is just perfect for her. She was up, she was defending whenever that she wouldn't let players get out, and she was just up there linking extremely well. Putting in crosses, getting sometimes inverted, sometimes staying wide. She just knows where to be, and it's just great to see. I also love
Defender of the Year.
Absolutely.
Or at least up there in top five.
Yes. She was our Defender of the Year. Midge, I just love Midge coming up. And again, going back to what I mentioned, that specific role that Casey Krueger started playing in that first game, where basically, like, you're like an auxiliary forward. You're up there and we're going to have the ball and you're going to be wide. You're going to create space. You're going to be able to have 1v1 matchups. You're going to be able to come inside and deliver crosses or take shots. That's like a role that's perfect for Midge too. Like, I'm with you. I don't want to see fullback Midge, but if you plug Midge into that kind of situation, I'm here for it. And she absolutely cooked. She cooked for Rodman's goal. That was a cooking. She was frying. Cooked.
I said Midge was cooking, and then Jaden Shaw put it on the plate, and yeah, Trey Rodman ate it.
Yeah, yeah. It was impressive, and I like that. I also have to give a shout-out to Abby Dahlkemper because, like, she was like, oh, Emma Hayes is our new coach. Interesting. Emma Hayes really loves Millie Bright. What does Millie Bright do? Just boot the ball perfectly, like, up the pitch for, like, 50, 60 yards right onto somebody's toe? I can do that. Watch this. And she was just, like, booting the ball over the place.
I mean, that's so true. But I will say, Abby Dahlkemper is also, like, extremely good at doing that.
She has
always been, like, one of her fortes.
Yes. She's excellent at it, and I love that she was like, "Nah, why? I still got this. I can do this. This is what I do. You like this? I'll give you more of this." It was very, very funny, and I think Emma had to be rubbing her hands, right? Like, okay, I got you. And then I just want to give a shout out to Sam Coffey too, because Sam Coffey, it took her a while with this team. We know with Vlatko, it took her a minute to get, like, even minutes onto the pitch. You know, they would bring her to camp, and then she wouldn't play. And it was just weird because I'm like, look at what she's doing with Portland. Look how she can play that role. And she did, like, for me, my eyes couldn't see it. I'm sorry. You're not going to tell me that she got so much better that, like, her performance in this game when she got the start was like, that was a product of all of this buildup. Because to me, that's what she's been doing. Like, that's the kind of thing defensively, she was great. She got in the way. She stopped some transitions that were happening. Obviously, again, that was not China's primary goal. But still, when a team starts to break, somebody needs to break it up. And she did a great job at doing that. And I just think her passing, she's quick when she moves the ball. She makes decisions. She moves the ball, like, puts her foot on it, spins right, spins left if she has to. But she gets the ball out from under her feet and moves it up. And she's got a really good passing eye. She's got really good vision to be able to move the ball forward. And I just think, like, she's really, really good at that shit. And I'm mad that it's taken so long. But yeah, I was just kind of, again, it wasn't their best performance as a team, but I thought she stood out to me. She played really, really well that second game, too.
Yeah, I mean, y'all know how I feel about Casey Krueger. Like, I think she's always just really, really good. And I'm like, I'm so mad at what this federation has been doing with her, because I'm like, she is, every time she steps on, it's like, hey, she should be playing. And it's like, she's not.
Yeah.
Why are you like this? I'm trying to think of who else I thought was playing well. I mean, I do think Tierna coming in played well. Big fan of the mask. Always fan of players wearing masks. No, but I thought she was good. And I mean, I just think it's a step in the right direction, right? I mean, obviously, Jaden Shaw scored the goal. But I think, like, Jaden Shaw and Mia Fishel coming in, they just have such electricity playing with each other.
Oh, yeah. And that first game, they were great.
me and Fish will hold up play. Like some, like, remember when Vlaco basically said that he wanted Alex Morgan to be me official? And it's like, hey man, you have a player in your system that can already do that. You guys are deciding not to look at her on days that end in Y. Yeah. Like, and so her hold up, it just like adds like another dimension. It actually kind of reminds me of like, you know, when like Kat came in and she was such a revelation, which like obviously we all knew, but we're like, oh my God. But it just like adds another dimension to the attack. And I think that's, if I'm thinking like more broadly about how this team played under Vlaco, for a long part of the time, they were just like one dimensional. Like they played in one way. And if it did not work, it was like, sucks to suck. Like the only time we saw them formation change really was against Sweden. And that was the players coming together being like, we're ignoring him. We're about to do this anyway. So like, you know, I think just have being able to have players who can actually come in and change games and bring a different style of play to either the way you attack, the way you defend, the way you move the ball through the midfield is really, really important. And I think that's also like, it's funny. It's like we talk about Emma Hayes coming in and like some people were like, how does Emma Hayes Chelsea's like Emma Hayes's Chelsea play? It's like Chelsea does play in one way, but they will also like think about the type of goals they will score. They can hit you. They can score goals in like 15 different ways. And it's like, they're never like that. Like while Chelsea has a playing style, also at the same time, like that playing style evolves game to game, sometimes minute to minute in games. And they're so multidimensional in the way they do things. And I feel like that's going to be crucial for Twyla right now. And then Emma, when she takes over, to add that multidimensionality. I don't know. That's a phrase, but adding like being able to be multidimensional and adding that to your game is going to be crucial for this team. Which is also why I'm really excited. I mean, we like laugh on the club side of like, Emma just only recruits 10s. Like everyone Emma has ever recruited has been a 10 at some point in their life. But I mean, great, I will say that.
We have plenty of them.
I mean, we have plenty of them, but there's a reason why like when you're like the way Mia Official plays, because Mia Official used to play as a 10, there's a reason why it's a different way she plays now as a 9 and how that adds to her game. She's also thinking one step ahead as a 9, but also thinking like, how can I also, if I need to, drop back in, hold the ball, maybe distribute, like doing a whole bunch of other things. So yeah, step in the right direction.
Yeah, no doubt. Okay, Nations League now?
You mean the Chaos League?
Correct, yes.
Absolute chaos.
All right, so the Nations League happened, and I'm gonna be real with you. I'm gonna be real with you. I'm gonna be honest with the people. I'm gonna be honest with my co-host right now. I don't fully understand the format yet. I just knew exactly like what happened was like I knew like the stakes of the games that needed to happen, especially on the last day. Like I followed that piece. I understand groups and all that, but I was just kind of like,
Do you want me to explain it to you?
Okay. Please do. I was going to say, so if you got it off the top of your dome, please let me and the people know. Thank you.
It's because Nations League is formatted in the exact same way. Like UEFA Nations League and CONCACAF Nations League are formatted in the exact same way. You have, and it involves all of the member, like the member organizations in the continent, or like, well, technically group of continents, right? So it's formatted in three ways. You have three in each one, and this is literally the same for CONCACAF, that like the qualifications for the Women's Gold Cup, it's all the same. So in UEFA Nations League and CONCACAF Nations League, you have three leagues. Now League A are like your heavyweight teams, right? Your England's, your France's, your Germany's, your Netherlands,
Spain,
Sweden, Belgium, like all that stuff, right? Like your quote unquote heavyweight teams. And then in B is like your more midweight teams. For some reason, I will say, I don't know why Ireland was in League B, but they were. But like smaller teams that maybe haven't been like super historically successful. Like I know, I believe like Poland won their group in the B league, like in League B as well. And then League C is like technically like the bottom of the pyramid, which is like your teams that are kind of up and coming, maybe just started a women's program. Like, it's a bad way to phrase it, but like the teams that maybe like your team in League A might beat like 14-0, but like it's kind of reality. And so it's set up in this like actual quote unquote league where you kind of have quote unquote promotion and relegation in that. So for B and C, for leagues B and C, if you win your group, then you get promoted to League A. And then for League A, if you come third in your group, you then play a playoff to see if you stay in League A with a second, with like a second place team in League B. And then it's the same for like, if you want to stay in League B and you come third in your group, then you play a playoff with a second place team in a group in League C to see if you stay in the League B, right? And so taking a quick detour to CONCACAF, it's the same thing of like now, for example, for League A out of CONCACAF, since Jamaica got relegated, they're now going to League B. And now for these preliminary games, they're really playoffs. The second place teams of the groups in League A then play the first place teams in the League B groups to see who makes it, like who gets in those final three spots of the Women's Gold Cup. So that's essentially what it is. It's like supposed to be this thing that I'm not gonna lie, probably really benefits teams out of UEFA of being able to play the big, like consistently play the more competitive teams, or I mean more competitive teams, like teams that are, I'll say, more quote unquote at their level, to see how they're ranking up against other competition. And so every year for the Women's Nations League at UEFA, the group winners then face each other in the Nations League final. For this year, since it's an Olympic year, the second, like, three out of the four teams in the finals are going to go, because France made it, because they scored a bajillion goals and went through their group in flying colors. And so, I was like, France, despite them, like, making through, I mean, I would never expect France to get second in the group, but just in case they did, they would be there anyway, because they're hosting.
Right.
So now, the second and third place teams of that group, so either if France makes it to the final, it's who they're playing against and who wins the third playoff game. Or if France doesn't make it to the final, it's whoever the two teams who make it to the final qualify for the Olympics. So, and there's like, it's a lot of chaos, but it's like the beginning. If you like know how the Nations League works on the men's side for both CONCACAF and UEFA, it's like modeled and they literally was said like copy and paste for these leagues. But yeah, that's how CONCACAF and UEFA Nations League works, is you have these like leagues with groups. So like England, for example, was like in League A, Group A, and then France was like League A, Group B. And so that's how the whole shindig works. It's actually kind of like a league.
Yeah. I really appreciate that, because that absolutely helps me like understand. Like I was just looking at it and I was like, okay, so I'm looking at the standings and all of that and seeing, but I would only really see like the permutations. I know they put out like videos to explain it, but I'm gonna be honest with y'all, I ain't looking at that. Like, what's that tweet? Like, I'm happy for you, or sorry that happened. Like, that was kind of like, that's where I was with it. I was like, I'll figure it out as they start playing. And then I was like, oh, I need some help. So I appreciate that. So there were a couple crazy games during this international break, and I don't know which ones you want to talk about first. I think maybe we save like the England-Netherlands, even though they didn't play each other. Like their games had massive result.
They did play each other, and England came back in that 3-2 absolute chaos. Yeah. Shout out to Lauren James.
Oh, yeah.
Team GB would probably be more at the Olympics if you did not get a concussion during training and miss those two games.
That is true. That is true. But it's funnier that they missed it. And it's funnier that England's the reason why they're not going to be in the Olympics, because it makes it, for banner-wise, you know, being here in the U.S., it makes me happy. So
that is true. However, I don't know what UEFA was doing when they made these groups. Because England and Scotland had never been in the same group.
Yeah,
you
that was stupid.
Knew this year that they would be going for Olympic qualifying. Because, right?
Yep.
The Nations League, like how the, for the CONCACAF Nations League, you go to finals. For the UEFA Nations League, you go to finals. And like in Olympic years, and I think for maybe Euro qualification too, it's all, because it's Nations League, like now all of UEFA's qualifications into like everything is now through this tournament. And I'm like, you knew that England was going to be the team to qualify for Team GB. Like England had to qualify for there to be Team GB at the Olympics. And you put England and Scotland at the same group, which of course created all of these questions that people were asking Scottish players of if they were going to fold during the game, so that way they could potentially, like, England could get a big win and then could potentially make the Olympics. And they were like, how dare you? Have
y'all not talked to Aaron Cuthbert before?
Right. I was like, how dare you ask this question? On the other side, I was like, I should have defended better.
They really should have, because now the questions are like, interesting.
I thought they were trying to defend, and then Lauren James was just like,
No, I agree. I think they were trying. They just played extremely poorly.
Yeah. I mean, truly. But yeah, the two of them should have never been in the same group. The fact that they did was just really bad. There was also, I'm really mad that Belgium didn't show up in the way that they showed up against England, because I was like, there was an utter chaos scenario where England ties and Belgium wins and Belgium goes to there were, or like, or Belgium gets to the Nations League final and they have a chance to then go to the Olympics, which is the number one chaos scenario. And if that happened, I would have cackled, because it would have been bad for England and for Netherlands. And that is fundamentally hilarious.
That is. But also, but okay, so let's just talk about it. Because what happened was hilarious in and of itself, though, because England needed to top the group, and they needed to do so by beating Scotland, but also making up goal difference, right? So they had to beat to get on top of Netherlands.
The easiest way to describe it was they needed to better Netherlands' result and by three goals. So if so if Netherlands tied, for example, England just needed to win because it would have gone through. But if Netherlands won, England needed to win by whatever, like, if Netherlands won 2-0, then England needed to win 5-0 to get through on what? Not goal differential, because they would have tied the goal differential. The tiebreaker ended up not mattering, but England would have gone through on the third tiebreaker, which is goals scored. Because it would have been tied on points, and would have been tied on goal differential. So the third tiebreaker is goals scored, which England would have done.
Yeah. So this was extremely hilarious, because, and you could almost see it coming, but I was like, the scenario is too perfect for it to actually happen. So I still need to know. But yeah, so again, Scotland's defending in that game was atrocious. England came out, scored 12 minutes in, 1-0. And by the time it was extra time, they were already up 5-0. Lucy Bronze finally scores. They had a bunch of chances, but Lucy Bronze finally scores another goal to make it 6-0, 90+3. They did it. At that time when she scored the goal, they were going through, because even though Netherlands was scoring goals, they still needed to score another goal, correct?
Well, the minute before that, in game time, not in actual real time, but in game time, Netherlands got a third goal. So they were up on Belgium 3-0, yeah, which means England needed a sixth.
Right.
And literally the next minute, that's when Lucy Bronze scored.
Right.
So England, and like you saw in her reaction, she was like, yes. And I was like, I mean, this is hilarious. Serena, I have questions about what you did with Lauren James in the second half, but we're going to get there. Yeah. But then it was like, oh, England's going through. And then Andre can take it away.
And then 90+5. Netherlands score, which is funny because the England game is over. The ref blew the whistle. There's nothing more they can do. They scored all the goals they were going to score in that match. They just needed to make sure the final whistle blew in Netherlands versus Belgium, and they were good. That did not happen. 90+5. Netherlands scores the goal against Belgium to make it 4-0. England out. Team GB out. I was rolling.
So this is where I'm like, I don't believe match fixing took place. However, I flip from that England game to the Belgium game, the Netherlands-Belgium game. And I said, Belgium, what are you doing? You could have cleared the ball. What are you doing right now? I'm not saying it happened, but I'm saying, Belgium, your players weren't making serious sporting decisions at this moment. I will say, Belgium's number one keeper, Brighton's keeper on loan from Chelsea, Nikki Everard, came out with an injury, but she made like 11 saves. So I think Nikki Everard was like, I'm getting them to the Olympics. And it was like, no, you're not. And so, yeah. And at first they said it was Miedema scored. It was actually Damaris Eggerola.
Yes.
Team GB, this also never would have happened if the US was good at recruiting dual nationals. That's digress. That's also true. It's really, you got done by the Netherlands and you got done by the US.
Which makes it extra spicy. And so, to be honest with y'all, like, okay, I like so many of the English players. So, like, me cackling, me being happy about how random this was, the chaos, first of all, the chaos of this was just pure entertainment. But honestly, there's also, like, a little bit of beef that's been brewing between, like, U.S. fans and English fans, because England, like, won the Euros, and they thought, like, oh, now, not all of them. Not all of y'all, if you're listening. Not all of y'all. So, please, don't take this personally. If this ain't you, this ain't you. Right. This is only like, if you see yourself in the mirror, that's cool. If you don't, okay, you're not here. That's fine.
But the shoe doesn't fit.
Right. So, but some were like, oh, England are now the new U.S. women's national team. And I'm like, hey, listen, y'all moving kind of funny if this is the new U.S. women's national team, because I don't remember this part of the program.
You were on one with tweeting Trubies. That interaction made me cackle. You know what's actually been most interesting to me? And I feel like we're probably mostly only going to talk about England and Netherlands in this. I mean, Spain came back and did something wild.
Yeah, I was going to say, I got two teams that are on my unserious list that I need to talk about.
Besides Sweden, who's the other team?
A team that's permanently on it. They have like a penthouse condo in the land of unseriousness. It's Norway.
Oh. The penthouse condo.
They do. They live
it's
in
really
good.
It's really funny. They are. Okay, well, you're going to talk about this other thing. So I'm just telling the people, we're probably not going to like vamp on Spain a lot. We're probably not going to vamp on France a lot, even though the Renaissance is back and continuing and is just very French. And they're doing
not
really
very
well.
French.
They're being extra French and they're doing well. And then obviously that Spain losing to Italy and then coming back against Norway.
Coming back against Sweden.
Like, it was dope. There's a lot of interesting things going on. But I'll just say, it was really interesting seeing after this game people talking about how the Olympics don't matter. And I will say, it was like mostly people from England who were like, the Olympics don't really matter. And it was interesting because I saw a few tweets. I think they were from Jesse asking like other folks, like, do the Olympics matter to you? Like, here in England, the Olympics don't really, like, for Olympic football, really matter to us. And then other folks are saying, oh, you know, for Norway, for Sweden, like, saying the Olympics matter so much, all this stuff. And it's just, like, a fascinating conversation to me. And not even coming, like, taking myself out of being born and raised in the U.S. and us seeing, obviously, the Olympics as, like, the pinnacle of all sport. But I was like, even then, I think for the majority of people around the world, like, you show them rings to anyone around the world, and they're going to immediately know what you're talking about. It doesn't matter what sport you're in. Like, it doesn't matter summer or winter. Like, people see those rings, and it's like, this is the pinnacle of sports achievement. Like, I think maybe Scams said this of people being, like, especially on the men's side, since Italy 23, of, like, the Olympics don't matter. And Scams was like, Neymar said he cried when he won a gold medal. Like,
yeah,
it is, like, that is still a really big deal. And, like, yeah, I know that there are changes I think the Olympics should make to the women's tournament.
Definitely.
Actually, it would be really good if it was, like, a U23, but that's a conversation for another time. But, like, the Olympics is, like, I know the World Cup is a pinnacle of soccer, but I was like, the Olympics is a pinnacle of, like, all sport. Like, being able to say you're an Olympic, like, growing up, like, obviously I wanted to win a World Cup, but I, like, wanted to go to, like, I wanted to say I was an Olympian. Like, that is, like, no matter where you're from, like, that is still, like, a really big deal. So it's, like, really interesting seeing a lot of the chatter come out of being like, I mean, it's fine that we didn't make the Olympics. Like, A, it's a summer off for these players, which I was like, now that is true.
Yeah.
Like, that's a summer off on them legs. That's going to be really good. But I'm also like, don't just brush off the Olympics. Like, the Olympics really matter to, like, also, like, a lot of people. Like, you bring the World Cup trophy around, men or women's, and people might know what you're talking about. You bring an Olympic gold medal around, and people will be like, oh my God, like, blah, 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 blah. Like, exactly. Those exact words.
Just like that.
But yeah, like the Olympics, it's like, it is huge saying you're an Olympian, even if you don't met, like, regardless of meddling, like saying you made it to the Olympics is like a big deal.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with you. I will say though, and I was listening to Counterpressed a bit because they talked a bit more about this as well. And of course they're UK based. So this is their perspective. And the Euros is like the great equalizer of that, right? Like, the Euros is a very intense competition. It's some of the biggest teams across Europe. It's a very difficult competition to win. We don't really have that here because as much as CONCACAF can get you, like, we don't have, like, the full allotment of squads like they do in those the major European squads, right? Though we have some squads that can cause problems, right? It's not quite the same. So I get it from that standpoint. But where I disagree is that, like, because there were a couple where they were like, you know, they put it on, somebody almost started to say, and I don't remember who, but they were like, it's almost on par with the World Cup. And I was like, stop it. It's not. But it's like, that's kind of their next level of competition to get really excited about. But also think about how that comes across to the rest of the world, because that's a very closed off competition, right?
That's
the World
right,
Cup
yeah.
and the Olympics host teams from all over the place. And so to, like, elevate that to the same level, regardless of how you personally feel about it, I think is wrong, because the Olympics are important because they don't allow you to just flood the competition with a bunch of UEFA squads. You're going to have to face squads from all over the world because it's a global competition. And to me, it being a global competition versus being something that's continental is massively different. So while I respect the Euros, I think the Euros are fun as hell. I kind of would love to have something similar here. And that's why I kind of think some of the crossover women's soccer between CONCACAF and CONMEBOL is great. Like, I want to see more of that because we can have, in terms of competition, something similar. It's just going to require some expansion. But I also think, like, just because y'all ain't make it, like, if y'all would have won the Olympics, I think the talk would have been a little different, right? The talk the day after they crash out is kind of something different, right? So I also think, but I'm with you, a gold medal, being able to stand, like, the medal stand, winning a gold medal, like, that's iconic stuff. Like, that stuff is what endures. Like you said, like, the pinnacle of sport is kind of there. And the Olympics has a really weird history, of course. But I still think that, like, winning a gold medal is dope. And the fact that you can do that as soccer, you can pair a World Cup with a gold medal is, like, incredible. So, like, and we saw, like, even though we felt it was a little bit of copium at the time, like, they were just trying to, like, deal with it, the rose gold, you know, that they won, the U.S. won with the bronze.
That's my new nickname.
They were frustrated, but they still got a medal, right? So, like, there is importance to me in the Olympics, and I don't think they should really, like, I don't agree with the fact that you just ignore it, because I do think a closed-off competition is always going to be substandard to a global competition.
Yeah, and I mean, I was really taking, I haven't listened to that Counterpress episode. I think for me, it's just like I think it's a difference between, like, thinking, like, purely soccer versus, like, sport in general. And, like, we have seen, for example, like, to be fair, for the U.S. in the Olympics, like, winter or summer, but, like, especially summer, like, people go low cray bananas here, because I can't lie, for a lot of things, like, the U.S. is going to do really well, and we're going to, like, you know, enjoy it and be a lot of Americans, whatever. But yeah, I just, like, for me, that's really the way I was coming at it. I was like, I think especially in countries where maybe people haven't really gone around to your soccer team, men's or women's, like, doing something like winning a world. Like, I think about, like, Canada, for example, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, when they won that Olympic gold, like, that was, like, boom, that puts Canada on the map. Not saying that Canada weren't on the map before, but we, like, honestly really started looking at Canada in, like, a different light, where it was like, whoa, you did this, like, huge thing. Like, you beat out Sweden. Like that, you know, it's a really big thing. And I think it was funny, the person in, person responding to Jesse was saying, you know, for Norway, for Sweden, like, it's still a really big deal. And I'm like, I think you make that argument for, like, a lot of things, of, like, you know, to transition us to, I'm like, Germany's kind of been having, not mid-offs under the radar, but they've been kind of floundering under the radar, because there's been, like, bigger storylines, but also, like, a big thing of, like, how Germany hasn't made it to the Olympics in, like, one, two, or three cycles. And it's like, no, you can't exactly draw a through line between winning the Olympics and then being able to go win a World Cup, because they're, you know, obviously different tournaments and things like that. But it also kind of does say something about your tournament of kind of how your squad is doing, of, like, if you can or can't make it to the Olympics and potentially do well.
Yeah, so, yeah. No, I completely agree. So before we move on from the Nations League, I feel like I need to talk about my unserious squads, because, again, me and Sills from Shea Butter FC, we are constantly learning this lesson. We wanted to believe.
How have you not learned this lesson? I watched them up close once.
We learned the lesson after the last Euros, all right? So, but we're now, like, constantly getting, like, reinforcement of the lesson, just in case.
Oh, see, you think about letting yourself believe, and I say, I saw that in person. I was like, I believe in Gruerijen, and that's about it.
But it's because of, like,
I believe in Caroline Grant Hansen. I don't believe in anyone else, or I don't believe in them as a squad. I believe in them as individuals. Like,
come on. Hey,
look, you're doing it right now. We're watching it in real time. You were trying to convince yourself, and I'm like, I've seen what I needed to see. I thought what I needed to thought. I'm telling you, I believe in them as individuals. I do not believe in them collectively.
I will not make that mistake again. It's just like every time they, like, get a new coach, or they do something different with the formation, or they actually put players in the right positions, I'm like, okay, we're going to get serious now. And then they don't. So, like, I'm going to require, I don't care. Honestly, I don't know what it would take for me to actually like publicly believe in this team again. Like my heart, a piece of my heart will always want to, just because look at the talent, look at the lineups they could put out there. Like I get on FIFA and I can ball with this squad. I know it's not a one-to-one parallel, but that's like, it's what I got. And it doesn't make sense to me, but like, okay. So they start their Nations League, they 6 games. Okay. September 22nd, they start their Nations League games. They draw 1-1 with Austria. Okay. Why is that happening? Then they lose 3-2 to Portugal. Why is that happening? Then they come back. They lose 2-1 to France. Okay, fine. France is great. Your 2-1 loss, that's not really anything. Like France, everybody would say France is better than Norway. So that's not bad. Then they play France again, 0-0. Okay, we're getting better, right? We're getting better. This is a better result. Then move on, 4-0 against Portugal. Okay, we're balling. That was December 1st. We're balling. Look at that. We got Edda Hegerberg. She scores a hat trick. You got Sophie Roman-Hoke who came in. She's playing really well for Liverpool. It's great. She scored her first goal for Liverpool just a week or so ago. Like, okay, we're looking good right now. And then last day of Nations League, they lose to Austria 2-1. Like, what is wrong with this squad? And not only did they lose to the 2-1, their goal was scored at 90+4. Like, they were like, what is wrong with them? They get on my nerves so much. They're so unserious. I hate it.
Oh my God. You're going, what is wrong with them?
It's annoying. I can't stand them. They hurt my heart. They really do hurt my heart. They hurt my heart so much. And then joining them.
I can't lie, though. I haven't watched any of their games. You want to know why? Because I don't want to look at... No, because I don't want to find 18 different streams to watch these Nations League games. Fair. Hello. Yes, you wait for let someone thing. Buy the rights so we can watch these games. So I don't have to go on like 7 different streams or have a random game picked up by CBS Sports Network or Galazzo Network. I will say there were 3 right. random games on there and I was like, okay. But like, come on. Sell the rights. Be a serious organization. Sell the rights deal so we can go watch it.
Somewhere. Yes. I will absolutely second that because that was the frustrating thing. Like I watched enough because I had to. Like I'm always going to try my best. But sometimes people be like, do you have a link? And I'm like, listen, I don't want to get you in trouble. I don't want to like be responsible for what might happen to your computer. Like I'll figure it out over here. But like sometimes it's really tough to like watch some of these games. And then, okay, back to the second unserious team that I said I needed to get to. The main reason I need to get to this squad is because Sweden flag Twitter was real mad at me during the World Cup when I said that they're not even that good because they just thought it was like salty American. And I'm like, first of all, I don't understand.
But they're not.
I wish when people came at me like that, I'm like, I understand where y'all think that like all Americans are the same, but like I got a body of work. Like it's not because they beat the U.S. I didn't think the U.S. was going to be good. And I said it 1,000 times leading up to the World Cup. So like I wish people just had the receipts or just like do a little bit of research or scrolling, figure that out. But they got big mad at me saying it weren't really that good. Then I said that Alyssa Nair made that save, and then everybody kept sitting sweet on Twitter, got all mad again, started sending me pictures of that still image that ain't conclusive at all, but they kept sending it like, cry more. And I'm like, I ain't crying. I don't care, but I'm just saying.
I only cry for Alyssa because she
exactly,
pulled her heart out.
She did it. She did it. And I know how she is. I know how intent she is. And she swears she saved it, and I don't have any evidence still that she didn't. So anyway, listen. When I say your team's not that good and when I say you're still unserious, this is the kind of shit I'm talking about. They were up 3-1 on Spain at halftime. How the hell you lose that game by multiple goals? What is wrong with you?
Five?
That doesn't make sense.
Five to three?
You scored 3 goals in 29 minutes against Spain and then you allowed yourself to lose 5-3. Spain had 31 shots on you. You had 26% possession. What are you doing? Like, this is what I mean about the squad being so unserious. Like, set pieces, great equalizer. Y'all kill it with set pieces. I love Connerit as well. I think she's really kind of coming to her own. I like to see her. She got an assist. I thought she has her moments and I like it. But like, y'all got to figure it out because I'm sorry. I don't care that Spain just won the World Cup. That squad is still going through a lot. They're still vulnerable in a lot of different ways. There ain't no reason you should be up on any squad 3-1 and then lose 5-3. Don't make no sense at all. Extremely unserious.
They really are. Yeah, when I saw five, I said, oh no. Bon Mati wasn't even playing, dog.
I'm saying.
How do you get up 3-1 and you lose 5-3? It's the same. It's like the same thing of them knocking US out. I'm like, you got one, objectively one lucky penalty, and for some reason, Zira decided to show up in a way we have still yet to see her ever again.
I was gonna say, I hadn't done it since.
Like, not since. Like, please be serious. 5-3
After especially 3-1 up in halftime.
It'd be different if it was
four
like
goals in the second half. Four.
It'd be different if it was like 1-1, 2-1, 2-2, 3-2.
Exactly.
Like 3-3, and then they went from there. You were 3-1 up. All you had to and do was hunker down.
You want to hear the dumbest thing as well? The last three goals scored, 78th minute, 81st minute, 89th minute. What's wrong with you?
I know. I was watching it in real time because it was really random on the Golazo Network. It
just doesn't make any sense at all. It's so annoying. Your squad ain't good. I'm sorry. Sweden flag Twitter, want better for yourselves. I'm sorry. Okay.
It's just secretly
are we done with the Nations League? Should we move to the NWSL real quick?
All I got to say is keep your eye on Germany. I'm a wee bit nervous about Germany.
Yeah, me too. They got problems over there.
Even though you got Nuskin.
Shock.
And I'm obsessed with her. And if you finally put Anyomi on. Go Melanin. However, keep your eyes. That's one of the teams currently flying under the radar, but like not in a good way. Also, yeah. You know who's secretly unserious? And it pains me because I love going to this country.
Oh, who?
Portugal.
Oh, yeah.
What happened? Portugal?
Yeah, I don't know.
What happened? Portugal?
I feel like Portugal is one of those squads that once you figure it out, people are going to be like, where the hell did this come from? And it's like the talent been there. I don't know what's happening that it ain't performing, but the talent is there.
You got Jessica Silva, first of all. Like, what? The squad full of ballers. Consistently doing well in the Champions League on the club level. Also, I thought they had a really good World Cup. As a debutante, had a good World Cup. I was expecting you to build on this. And you come last in the group? So, one win, 3 points? Wow, yeah. We were 1-5? Portugal, I'm disappointed. I want it better for you. Disappointed. I truly am. Like not y'all losing. And like,
here's the question. Who won't get it together?
Not when what's-her-face is in goal for Austria. I'm like, I deserve... better things should be happening. And you know who I'm talking about. I just can't remember her name, but I'm picturing her face. Zinsberg. She's a goalkeeper who's probably going to show out this weekend just because I said something. But...
Yeah. I got a question for you. Who going to get it together first, Portugal or Norway?
Don't make me answer that question. Because we both know the answer. One of them's teams played consistently in the Champions League and did something crazy to Bayern Munich.
Fair. I agree. I'm just wondering what it would take you to believe what it would take for you to believe in Norway. And but I understand.
I think Norway's gonna have to make it to like what stage was it when they lost to England like 9-0?
Oh my god.
Was that in the group stage?
No, I don't think that was in the group, was it?
I need to look it up again.
It was real bad. It was a real problem, and I was real upset because I actually think they needed to win that game, and they went on in there with like all their energy, and they were like, okay, we got this, and then all of a sudden it was like, you just got beaten in the head. It's a real problematic.
Except it was like, we got this, but also not really because we like lost by 9 goals, but like immediately. It was like 4-0 after like 25 minutes or something.
Yeah, it was the second... It was the second group stage game. You're right. Because the first group stage game, they came out, beat Northern Ireland 4-1. And then they were like, okay, we got this. And then England wrecked them 8-0. And then they lost. And then Norway lost to Austria again, 1-0. So apparently
they were down 4-0 in 34 minutes. So, yeah. Or no, sorry. They were down actually 5-0 in 30.
Yeah.
Just kidding. They scored, they allowed 6 goals in one half. That is when I immediately stopped believing. I mean, I was taught before, but I was like, I don't know, maybe do something a little spicy, a little something here and there, a little je ne sais quoi. And it was, I was like, yeah, I need you to do that. I need you to do better. I also need Portugal to do better because I'm deeply disappointed.
Okay, real quick, NWSL stuff. All right, let's talk about NWSL stuff real quick. We went over, obviously, you know, every time we miss a week, we go long. So y'all just apologies and thank you for listening is how I'm going to approach that.
Just think of it as 2 episodes in 1.
There you go. So NWSL framework dropped. It is currently NWSL free agency as well. Of course, the expansion draft is also coming up as we record today. It is, what, 8 days away? Today's December 7th. It is on December 15th. So let's go through the framework that and I just kind of pick out the highlights. The league sent a long email with a bunch of stuff in there. So I'm just going to kind of like go through what I thought was a highlight, some highlights. I think with all of the platforms that the new media deal brought out, I think it's important that the league is kind of setting the tone right now in terms of communication. Like, you're going to have, okay, Friday is going to be Amazon Prime Day. So your Friday kickoff is always going to be on Amazon Prime. Your Saturday doubleheader is going to be Ion Network, which is the Scripps, whatever that is, Scripps Media Company. I believe it's Ion Network. WNBA games are on there as well.
I believe that's, I don't know how to find it.
Over the someone air, right?
Every week, just someone tell me how to find it. I don't know.
When we tweet, we'll let y'all know where to find them. Sundays are going to be CBS Sports Network and Paramount Plus. And then the thing that's really going to get a little tripped up is that ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN Deportes, ABC, and ESPN Plus are all going to have games. Basically, every game that's on one of the other channels is going to be on ESPN Plus as well. But like,
wait, I thought it was that. Sorry. They still have Sunday games, though, right?
Yeah.
ESPN's day is Sunday. Okay, so I thought you were saying...
I don't know if ESPN's day is Sunday. It didn't explicitly say that. I think it is Sunday. It didn't explicitly say that in the thing. I don't believe.
Let me go look back at this press release, because I thought it was Sunday.
This
is going to be real fun later.
Exactly. It would make sense just because they don't have an NFL, so they might as well get some programming, because that's kind of what's going to happen anyway on a Sunday. But I just, when I was looking at it, I was trying to read through it, and I didn't see anything that it called out a specific time for the ESPN games, which is always going to be interesting. It just says, like, ESPN will air a package of matches across ABC, ESPN, ESPN Deportes, ESPN2, and ESPN Plus, but doesn't give a specific like time. So I don't know. Those ESPN games are going to be interesting. We'll have to see. But while Cordy continues to look that up, I also want to talk about the Challenge Cup, because we know what happened there. It was, you know, in a media call, what was it? I think it was ahead of the championship. Jessica Berman, the NWSL commissioner, was asked about getting rid of the Challenge Cup and how it was reported by Jeff Kasu from The Equalizer to be now just basically a Community Shield match, which in England, what is it, the league winner versus the FA Cup winner is how they do it. And so it's kind of going to be that now. It's one game at the beginning of the season. It's going to be the league winner, the championship winner versus the Shield winner. So San Diego versus Gotham is going to happen as basically the first game of the season. And kind of be a Community Shield. I don't love it. I think the Challenge Cup does it, like mid-season cups, and I don't want to get into that discussion like right now, because it's going to be like this episode will get very long. But we'll talk a little bit later about different options. But I'm a little sad that the Challenge Cup and its mid-season tournament, like League Cup iteration, seems to be gone. The Olympic break seems really interesting, though. All NWSL teams will play during the Olympic break, but they're also looking to add international squads as well, international clubs. I don't know where they're going to come from. I saw a report they're looking at Liga MX Femenil. That would be dope. I believe Sweden clubs might also be in season during that time, or starting a season during that time. So that might also be interesting if we got some of those to come over. So I'm very much interested to see what that tournament's going to look like, how they're going to, the teams that are going to be involved and how they're going to structure that. But to me, those were the highlights. So, Courtney, what'd you find?
Nothing. I think it was that I thought, okay, these players are going to, like, these games are going to happen Friday through
Sunday.
Sunday, right?
Mm-hmm.
So thus, if you have your Friday night game, one game on Friday night. It kind of, like, the press release read to me of, like, you'd only have one game on Friday night. You'd have two games on Saturday. So then, like, that leaves, yes, like, Sunday to ESPN or CBS Sports Network /Paramount/...
Yeah.
Maybe Golazo Network, I don't know. That's why my brain was like...
ESPN's not going to have a Monday game, because they're going to have Monday Night Football for most of the season. Well, actually, not most of the season.
Who has... I thought NBC had Monday Night Football. Is that not true?
No, that's ABC.
I don't know anything about the end of the NFL, just so... My brain was like, ESPN...
It's been a minute since I followed that league, so... Mm.
I
don't think so, though.
Maybe NBC has Thursday night football. I don't know.
NBC has Sunday night. I know that.
I'm not watching the NFL like that ever, fundamentally. But so I just kind of assumed that they'd be on Sundays. Even though an interesting part of this deal, which they're still trying to figure out. They're supposed to be, what, I believe 168 games?
I can't 26. Do math, so
I think it's 26. It's a 26 game balance season. So it's like somewhere around 168, but they only announced the media rights deal for 118 games.
Yes.
Where is that last portion? They said, I mean, I will say the initial press release from November 9th said that the NWSL is going to put them on. The question is where? But also, I'm like, I feel like it's like huge rights deal asterisks. Not every game has a home on a big channel or like a big media company. So it's very, it's very confusing to me. But yeah, also I heard that I saw some tweets, maybe it's from Jenna Tunnelly, maybe, saying that the Olympics break was actually CBA mandated.
So yeah, it is. Yep.
I was like, huh, because I feel like they would have found a way to try to play through that. Which technically something like that is perfect for a Challenge Cup. But now we know that a Challenge Cup has kind of moved to the Community Shield, which I know you have strong feelings about it. I have slightly less stronger feelings, but I only have slightly less stronger feelings because they announced that there was going to be like a in summer tournament. So, but also I'm like not that mad about it because I won't have to wake up at like 4 o'clock in the morning to watch soccer games anymore. Yeah, that will literally be a morning prime time and it'll be great. The latest you go is 5 p.m. I love that for us.
Yeah, I do as well. Let's see, what else? The regular season kicks off March 16th, so that's also important to note. So we should have some framework by then of a bit more. Hopefully, we'll get a schedule sometime soon. Don't bug Meg Linehan. Please don't do that. She's tired of it, and she actually might block you now. I think she's very much over the joke.
She will 100% block you.
So don't do that. There's that. I also think, what was it? November 23rd, I believe, is the championship game. Yeah, November 23rd. So it looks like
the weekend or the weekend the quarterfinal before Thanksgiving.
Oh, the other big thing. Yeah, the other big thing is that the byes to the semifinal round are gone. So the playoffs expand to 8 clubs are going to qualify for the playoffs in 2024. They're going to be 4 quarterfinals.
Wait, I thought they said they were
going
to keep it at 6.
Nah, it's going to 8. And the quarterfinal round is going to take place from weekend November 9th and 10th. And then the semifinal round the following weekend, 16th, 17th. And then the championship game on the 23rd. Now, that's great. But what I really think they need to do for a number of reasons, especially because November 23rd is super close to like travel time for like it's pre, you know, I hate that there's no other word to call that holiday, but whatever. Y'all know which one I'm talking about when you eat turkey. But like, I think they really needed to announce the location of the championship much sooner. Like it cannot come like in August or September. Like we need to know that so people can start planning in like June or July at like the latest. Like they need to figure out a way to increase that. And I also think it might be a little interesting because you would assume with Kansas City opening their stadium that might be a natural selection. So you can maybe even pencil that in and start looking at it. But also that stadium is small. Like I think it's 11K capacity. That's not really what you want for a championship game. You're going to want more people to be able to sell more seats. So you're going to want more people there. So I don't know if they're absolutely going to get it. I could still see it, but I could see that big question mark being like, do we really want to put our championship in an 11,000 seat stadium? I don't know if the answer is yes, even if it is new.
It's 182 games, by the way, not 168. I missed the 8 clubs in the playoffs now. I don't know how I feel about that.
So the headline here even says 119 match schedule, 118 matches to feature on national platforms. So I don't know where, like, I can't do math.
That 19,
so whatever.
I think, is a Challenge Cup.
Okay. Oh, okay. Gotcha. So, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that 19.
But, like, yeah, that is a lot of games that don't really have a home right now. And I don't believe they're all going to be on ESPN. So that means the league, you're basically going to be going to, like, NWSLsoccer.com to watch them, which I hope that doesn't happen too often, because getting a media rights deal and then just watching old school style like that, or kind of like when I was in New Zealand watching games and I had to go to the watch.nwslsoccer.com site, like, it works. It's cool. It's dope to be able to wake up and watch games, but that's not like, that doesn't give you the presence of like you're watching a big contest from like a really good league. So I'm a little worried about that as well, but hopefully the other matches that, I mean, there'll be plenty on other channels, but that is a question mark. We'll see. It also really depends on how many of those, like how many of those games actually make it to ESPN or other networks within the partnership.
ESPN and
the league actually have to put on. That's the question for me.
So, well, I actually will say that the ESPN and CBS have a number of games like already slated. I think they can both grow, but like they have like, for example, like a minimum number of games. So since they only have 118, let's do some quick math on my good old cellular phone.
Shout out to you for doing math on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
So that's still, but because it's 118, it's still 70 games, which is really, now that I think about it, that's
It's a few.
It's not even a few. That's almost half.
Yeah, it's a few.
Out of 182. Yeah. Like that's a lot of games. So for the NWSL to be putting on a lot of games is it's a lot of games that they like don't have a home for, which is not ideal.
I would say I agree. Now I have a question for you. Still NWSL related, off-season NWSL related. I have been of the opinion, and I want to know what you think, because two questions really. Free agency, we really ain't seen nothing. Like, we have seen a little bit of movement. Like, Gisele Thompson was announced by Angel City. That's dope. They did a little sneaky thing of promoting an A. Thompson shirt. I was like, I see where y'all going. And then today, they announced Gisele Thompson. So that was dope. Glad she's there. Playing with her sister. That's really dope. Plus, she's very good herself. So I also making the joke that, like, yo, listen, Stanford got wrecked at the College Cup 5-1 by FSU. This Stanford team was very much anticipating on having Alyssa Thompson. She was supposed to be like their star player and they didn't have her. Mm-hmm. So like now Gisele was supposed to go to Stanford too and that didn't happen. So like
she was also supposed to go to Stanford?
Yeah, oh, she was committed. No. So like how much does Stanford hate Angel City right now? That's the question.
That's some NorCal SoCal hatred.
Right. Probably a little bit. But okay, so here's my question. Do you think that as soon as the expansion draft is over, free agency is going to go absolutely bonkers? Because we know we're waiting for like Crystal Dunn to make decisions. We're waiting for a lot of big name free agents to make decisions as well. But like, so that, and also, do you think it's cowardly or do you think it's strategic that teams are waiting until after the expansion draft, especially the ones that have already made deals that are going to protect themselves in, from at least one of the expansion teams? Do you think it's like good strategy or what?
No, yeah, I think it's great strategy. I think it's being clever. I think it's finding a way to use the league's loopholes in your favor. I think the expansion draft should be abolished. Like,
yes.
If you want teams coming into the league, and I mean, I'm not bringing the idea of promotion and relegation onto this podcast, but like,
I appreciate you.
You gotta find a squad, like either a team that already has like a USLW team. Like, I think this entire expansion draft is extremely silly to me. Like, no other league functions in this way. I'm talking about soccer. I don't want to talk about American sports. But, like, no one else functions in this way of, like needing to be protected or not protected. And, like, I mean, it's actually funny now that free agency is a thing. Like, I wonder how many of these players are inputting no trade clauses into their contracts. But like it's just like it's a silly thing to me. Like if the player wants to go to go play at one of these new teams, the team will find a way to recruit them. It doesn't have to be this protected, unprotected list. I just think it's foolish. And I mean, I do think the way the league is going about it, and that, well, actually think it's funny to me that like you can't sign free agents during the expansion draft, which like makes sense, but it's like, I don't know. I'm just like not a huge fan of the expansion draft. Like, I just don't think it. I don't think it works. I think it just causes a lot of NWSL chaos, which obviously sometimes we like, but most of the time, as we've seen, like in the case of Louisville, like it really works poorly in a lot of the players' favors. And like, I do think probably the PA in creating their first ever CBA tried to get rid of a lot of that, I'll say. So players also just in general have more, have more control over their careers. But yeah, I'm like kind of done with the expansion draft. Like, I think at first when the league was like up and growing, it was like fun. But now I just think it's like, it's just like so much chaos. And maybe that's the thing that this league decides of, like, whoever is going to be those next expansion teams, of like finding a team that maybe not saying like a women's team, like a women's team to a men's team, for example, but like finding a way of like having a team that maybe already has an academy or something like that, or like the ownership group comes from, or like, you know, has a USL team or like an NASL team or like some type of thing that kind of gets rid of this expansion draft business. Cause I, at one point I thought it was fun, and now I'm just like, the sheen has won off, and I don't think the juice is worth the squeeze now.
I'll say this. I do think that I agree. I don't like expansion drafts. It's really hard to avoid them because, like, how do you just fill a team with a bunch of new players that they're going to need to play an entire season and be competitive? I think that's the other problem. But I think the way you do it is by working the mechanisms that already exist. So free agency exists. Trades exist. The draft exists. You know, like signing international players exists. And I think the way you do it is by saying, like, okay, you have access to a bit more money when you're starting out because you're an expansion team. And that's how you do it. The league has started to go that way a bit. I do think that trying to make deals ahead of time with other teams so that players can have time to prepare, make them early enough in the offseason so they can figure, was we heard on like the recap show, I believe, with Tobin Heath and Kristen Press, they were talking about how difficult it was to hear their names and be selected in an expansion draft. And, you know, even for a lot of other players, again, we're not talking about players that make millions of dollars. It's a lot to be able to pick up your life and move and live somewhere else. And then you got to like get out of a lease and all of that stuff. Like, we're still not talking about the kind of money where you can just throw it out and everything's fine. Like, we're not talking about millionaires on every single squad. So like, that is something that definitely needs to change, I think. And even once the money improves, I still think ethically an expansion draft is one of the worst ways to do this. And I hope that they learn through these processes that, like, when Boston comes in, when some of these other, another team comes in, which honestly, I hope there ain't too much expansion because, like, chill, it's got to be under 20 teams. That's kind of where I'm at. But also, like, I still think there's ways for a team to fill a squad. You want players who want to go there without you just plucking their name during some sort of like televised broadcast with commercials and saying, oh, suddenly you thought you were living here and playing here with these teammates. Now you're going here. And I know that's very difficult, but expansion teams have to like sell their vision. They have to recruit players. And you can do that in a number of different ways, a number of different mechanisms. And the squad, the roster sizes are still pretty small in the NWSL. So I don't think it's a big ask to be able to to do that without an expansion draft. So I would like to see more of that. And maybe you can like talk to players sooner, like in free agency. So maybe you get an advantage of being able to like sell your vision a bit more. Maybe you target like hometown players, like we saw with Utah. A lot of players that they've made deals with already are going home, like going back to Utah, or they went to college in Utah and have like familiarity there. So like those kinds of things are the things that I think you need to focus on and do. And I think it's super possible to do so. So I would like to see a team have to do that without having this mechanism, because it is pretty shitty, if I'm being honest. It ain't the best. And I'm a little sad for teams that haven't made deals yet. And on that day, on December 15th, in that expansion draft, some players are going to get told that they're moving to either the Bay or moving to Utah. And they've got no idea as we sit and talk right now, 8 days before it. And that's not great.
Yeah. To me, it just causes like too much like team drama that I'm like, I think we should find a way to get rid of this. But Andre, we've been talking for a while.
We have.
Is there anything else we want to chat about?
No, I'm just going to say, I think the strategy by teams to like avoid signing free agents right now, I think it is cowardly, if I'm being honest.
Oh, really? I think it's so clever. The NWSL rules are so foolish. I'm like,
they are, but I get the strategy of it. But also, like, one thing that's really cool about free agency and like an offseason with multiple mechanisms, like a college draft and all that, which also should be a signing day. We're not going to get started on that because I'll go on forever. But like, you want your league to be like in the news and have like reason for people to listen and pay attention to it in between games being played. And so the championship was played, what was it, November 30th? The biggest story, I think, after that was like Gotham having to be ashamed and to like celebrate their championship. Like that was like the biggest story. And that's not cool. Like we could have had a free agency signing. We could have had so many other things. It could have taken attention, been positive attention to the league. And so I don't necessarily think that's teams' fault because teams are kind of doing what they're doing, but I understand they're also trying to like limit the number of players that they'd have to protect. So like why sign a player right now when you can protect more players instead? But for me, it's also like Angel City did with the Giselle Thompson signing. Like, okay, you're going to have to protect her now in the expansion draft, but so what? Now Giselle Thompson is on your team. So like it's the same thing for me if it's like Crystal Dunn. Now you got Crystal Dunn. Hell yeah, she's one of the nine you protect. And so what? So like for me, I do think there's a measure of cowardice in it, but especially for teams that have already made deals and know they're only going to lose like one player, maybe none. I think those teams should be trying hard to sign players because a lot of teams are free.
Yeah, I was like, that I agree with. If you've already made a deal to send a player or money or whatever to an expansion draft, then I think you should be announcing free agency signings. Even though I do get on the flip side of, not teams not signing free agents and not announcing them. But I understand, for example, wanting to wait to sign because also it's like that means you have, on the player standpoint, you have less control over your future now.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
You hope they would protect you, but like also with a number like nine, like that is, you have 26 people on a roster like that. And obviously not everyone's going to stay, but like that is also such a small number of people to protect that. Like I get it. Like, it's almost like, yes, I think the teams are being clever, but I also think like the players are being clever of like my future is in my full control versus like signing, getting announced. Obviously when your contract, they should get protected, but like also, you know, you don't know how many teams have potentially players on no trade clauses. Heck, they could have nine players on no trade clauses. And it's like, you want to sign that free. Like what happens if you have 10 players with no trade clauses? Like you quite simply you literally cannot protect them all. That actually would be probably a logistical nightmare for the NWSL. But like, I don't know. I kind of get it. I think
most players probably don't have that.
Yeah. But like, you know, I would say probably also those big free agents that you want to sign, like probably have something like that. So don't know. I'm just saying, I get it.
Portland in their contract. So
I know a Gotham player has one. So it's like, I'm just saying, I get it. However, I think Crystal Dunn should in fact come home and give me a lot of joy.
I knew that was coming.
Just going to say that. Look, I did that one screenshot on that attacking third thing of all the jerseys coming across, and the one I screenshot happened to be Gotham. I'm just saying it's fate. Maybe it's fate.
I also fully expect it to happen, and it's going to be so damn good. Honestly, that team scares the hell out of me. So
Do you know how sick of me you're going to become?
Very, but it's going to be fine.
That means I get to watch Crystal Dunn in person.
Of which
13
I'm happy
times.
For you on that. Yeah, it's going to be
fun. Just from a sporting perspective. Yeah. I love watching soccer up close. I actually hate watching soccer on TV. Like, if I can be there, I'm going to be there. I hate watching soccer on TV. Because, especially, like, to be fair, the way that NWSL does it. Like, with... let's say like the Premier League, you know, they're going to pull out, like have like wider camera angles, like maybe you're going to get a better feel of the game. With NWSL, I'm like, if I don't have to watch this game on TV, if I can be there in person, I will be there. It's the same way of if you say Courtney gluten-free food will be there, I say, I will be there. That Mbappe meme. No matter what, I will be there. I will be watching a game in person if I can. And that's my plans. So that's why I'm like, I don't want to watch this game on TV. I want to be there. I don't want no lag either. That was the thing about the England game. Every time Telegraph Sport kept spoiling the game for me. Because they'd be like, so-and-so scored. And I'd be like, it hasn't happened on my janky feed that I'm watching on YouTube for some wild reason. Also, shout out to Lauren James. She's still a menace. Serena, why'd you switch her to the other side in the second half? That's when you stopped scoring goals. Did you see the connection point? I think I did because you broke up Neve and Lauren James. But she is a generational talent, and we've been shouting about it forever. And I just hope that she scores 17 hat tricks this weekend.
Same. Also, England lost the ability to control the game without Fran Kirby. So,
period. It's actually so funny to me that there was like, especially when Fran was injured, they're like, oh, Lauren James will be her natural successor. And I'm like, no, the way you actually cook is you have the two of them together on the field. That's how you cook them.
Always.
And that's exactly what happened. And also, yeah.
If doing it, you should probably do it too. Just saying. Neve Charles left back? Yep, exactly.
And that's on who? Mary Had a Little Lamb. You know about that phrase, right?
I do not. What?
I've literally heard, I heard it from Twitter. That's on Mary Had a Little Lamb. It was like it was a good time. I say it all the time.
All right.
Anyway, we've been chatting enough.
We have. And there's no time for Heated and Hyped. So, bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening to Diaspora United Podcast. Please subscribe and rate and review us anywhere you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Diaspora United Pod. That's Diaspora UTDPOD. And message us if there's anything you want us to talk about in our next podcast. See you next time.